Hi, and welcome to Housewives of True Crime.
Welcome.
Welcome. I am Tabitha. Give me Dateline, white wine, and I'll pick up your kids in the carpool line.
The next day, right?
Yeah, the next day.
Okay. And I am Gretchen. I like white wine, true crime, and in bed by 9 because I have a lot of stuff to do in the morning.
We are Housewives of True Crime.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. Welcome.
Welcome.
Housewives of True Crime. Very special bonus Patreon edition.
Another one. Yeah.
We just keep them coming.
Knock it out of the park, Tab.
We had the pleasure in talking to a real life FBI agent / friend. Gretchen has not met him in person, but she will soon, I'm sure, when she gets her butt over here to the Texas. But it was
I don't know if he's going to want to meet me in person after meeting me via a Zoom interview.
Why?
He might think I'm wildly inappropriate.
No, I think, you know what? I think he dug you, actually. I think he is very, he's one of those that has the sense of humor.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, I appreciate that.
You know, I have so much more to talk to him about also. So you guys, this episode is going to be TBD, TBD, TBC. What is it? To be continued?
Yeah.
TBC.
To be continued.
Yeah. But I hope you all enjoy. You get a little lesson, you get a little fun, you get a little, you know, inside the scoop of an FBI agent. And here you go. Here's Josh. We have a great guest today, one that I have been, for months, maybe almost 2 years now, Josh, wanting you to come onto our podcast. So welcome, Josh Hutchinson.
Welcome, Josh. I'm so glad. Tab was relentless. She has a knack for that.
I didn't go into a lot of detail about what you have done in your past, so because I wanted you to be able to tell everybody yourself.
I was in corporate America for years, worked in DC on 9/11, kind of impacted me. Drove me to a few years later to join the FBI. I was about 30 years old when I joined and made it into the FBI. Started out working white collar, civil rights, public corruption stuff. Moved into the national security area about 3 years in and spent the rest of my career working national security cases. And then about 4 years, 3.5 years into the Bureau, I made the FBI SWAT team. And so I spent a little over a decade on FBI SWAT, ended up being one of the lead breachers for the team.
What's a breacher?
We're the guys who devise the plan on how to get into every facility. So are there gates, doors, windows, backups, and then you go do it. So you bust down the door where the guy everybody sees with the ram hitting the door and it swings open. Mm-hmm. And the one idiot at the door without his gun out, that's your breacher.
Okay.
And so it was an incredible career. Did a lot of cases. I got really blessed to be in Dallas, where we had a lot of really great cases. We got to work on some.
Because they're a little crazy in Texas, right? A little more.
We have our fair share of crazy. The FBI considers the SWAT team a national asset, so each division has a team, but we work as one unit. So if there's an incident in D.C. or Oklahoma City or L.A., you can get sent and to all those places as part of the FBI SWAT team. So we have the same uniform, same training, so we can work together wherever we're at. So I got to travel quite a bit, get deployed. A lot of great experiences.
So I have just always kind of thought that people that ended up in the FBI had a military background or a law enforcement background. I mean, that's quite a jump from corporate America to that. I mean, do they just have a... you know, help wanted FBI page I've never located.
I think we need to find it.
Yeah. I mean, what really drew you to that? And when you walk in and say, I've been working in an office, I think you need to give me a badge. Do they look at you kind of sideways?
So crazy enough, there is an FBI jobs and special agent okay. is one of them.
I would apply.
So you can go apply. I think one of the things that makes the FBI successful is that they really do look for a wide, diverse background of people. So that whatever case you get, there's probably somebody in the FBI who's been in that field.
Smart.
There is a heavy military former law enforcement group. But in my class that went through Quantico with me, we had teachers, lawyers, scientists, had a literally rocket, like a engineer working on nuclear subs, like a really wide span.
I never knew that. That's fascinating.
So whatever your background is, if you're wired right in the head, mm-hmm. maybe wired wrong, depending on how you look at that. Yes. But the FBI can be a good choice for you.
I've known Josh now for 2 years. So we were talking about how you got into SWAT, because that generally has a military or law enforcement background. And Josh kind of looks the part of somebody that has been.
Yeah, you're so made. You look exactly. I'm in a bar. I'm like, that's the agent. That's him right there.
I actually kind of cleaned up my beard a little bit for y'all today. Mm-hmm. Actually, for my wife, she gets tired of it when it gets.
We all do.
Yeah, this is a great story. I'll edit some of the salty language in it. But I'm walking through the office in Dallas, and this guy grabs me and is like, "Hey, man, are you trying out for SWAT this year?" And I was like, hadn't really thought about it. And he's like, "They need guys like us. You got to do it. There's a need." And I was like, "All right, bro. Sure." So I look up, see what the requirements are, standards, start training for it, show up for tryouts. It's like 3 a.m. You're sitting in this dark room, have all your stuff and your gear and your food and water for the day. And that guy walks up to me and he's like, "Hey man, I never asked, what branch of military were you in?" And I was like, "I didn't serve in the military." And he was like, "Oh, where were you a cop at?" I'm like, "I wasn't a cop.
I'm not either. I just have a desire to put my life on the line because somebody walked up to me."
And he looks at me and he goes, "Oh, you are so screwed today." Like, they're going to kill you. And then I, about 15 and a half hours later, I'd passed everything and made the team. So
you showed them. What do you have to do to test for SWAT?
It's pretty strenuous. And I'll say one of the things I love about FBI SWAT, few places in the government where there are no variations for age, sex, like whatever it is, here's the standard. You have to be able to meet it for your entire time. Every year you have to go through the physical fitness testing. So no matter how old you get, you still have to pass it.
I like that.
It gives you a level of confidence. So there's just you start your day with a fitness test that involves like weighted pull-ups. You got to do a certain number, some sprints, a little distance running, push-ups, sit-ups, and you have to meet it.
That's not for me.
I'm thinking this sounds like awesome, except for like putting the life on the line. That's where I tap out.
Yeah,
the breacher part, mm-hmm. the door thing.
So if you pass all that, you get to go do the shooting quals, and then you have to shoot good enough. And those are the two, first thing in the morning, pass, fail. If you fail, we send you home. And then once you pass that, the rest of the 2 days are basically kick your butt fitness-wise, get you to complete exhaustion, and then go throw you in a challenging tactical situation where you have to keep your cool, think clearly, and perform at a high level. And you just do that nonstop in different scenarios. And they rate you on your safety, how clear-headed you were, like how you responded to things. Were you overly violent? Were you too calm? And then that scoring gets measured out. And
that sounds like the FBI has put a lot of thought into this. Good for them.
Yeah, it's a science.
Good for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so I think, Gretchen, you probably want to know, what are some of the craziest cases?
Of course I do. I want to know whatever you're willing to dish up.
This is always hard because I was talking to my kids about some of it because they love stories about mm-hmm. work, and there's like funny stories and then there's really good cases. So we hit a house, and we usually hit the houses at like 6 a.m. Bad guys are usually still asleep. There's kind of rules around when we are allowed to hit houses. So you often catch people in unusual circumstances at 6 a.m.
Not sleeping, or sleeping.
No, I think 6 a.m. is the magic hour. Because I think that when you are up, say, using like methamphetamines or something, I think that you crash around 5 is about it.
Yeah.
Right? 6, I think you're snoozing. Not that I know.
Oh, so we hit this house at 6 a.m. A couple of rules of tactics, right? Like once you get control of somebody in a space, you never give it up. It's yours now. Well, we come in and we have our stack. which is just a line of guys, and you got your guy up front who's your eye, and we own the living room, and we're yelling, calling people out. A female comes out, and she's like got a blanket around her, and she's like covered up like this. You can't see her hands. And so the guy at the front of the stack was like, show me your hands, show me your hands. Mm-hmm. Man, she puts those hands up, and I'm new guy, so I'm kind of further back in the stack. I just hear him yell, oh God, go back to your room, go back to your room.
She was like super naked.
She was completely naked, and he just threw all tactics out the window and was like, get some clothes on.
Come back out decent.
She was safe. She ended up being a really sweet woman.
Oh.
Who was in a bad situation.
Oh man.
Yeah. Wow. But one of the best cases, probably a couple of the highlights that we were allowed to talk about, was the Yasir Saeed case that we had here in Dallas. He was a Egyptian living in America, living in Dallas, working as a taxi cab driver. He felt his daughters were becoming too westernized and were an embarrassment to his family. So New Year's Day of 2008, he told them he was going to take them out for a New Year's lunch, got them in his car, drove down downtown Dallas and shot both of them as an honor killing, got out of the car and walked away. Girls weren't quite dead yet, pulled out their cell phone, called 911, asked for help, and said, our dad just shot us. So Saeed then fled the country. And in Dallas, we were looking for him for 12 years. He made the FBI top 10 most wanted list. And we had a group of agents working, tracking this guy, trying to follow him, had some ideas of where he was in the world.
Did you guys ever go out to where he was?
No, because he was usually in countries that we knew. He was smart enough to know, go stay in countries that are not cooperative with the U.S. Mm-hmm. Government and law enforcement, and wouldn't be helpful. There was one time we did, when was it? I'm trying to remember the year. I think it was in 2017. We had reporting that he might be back in the U.S. Had someone spot him. He was supposed to be staying at an apartment. They tried to rally us. We got case agents on it, called SWAT, said, we think he's in this apartment. We went, hit the apartment. It was empty, but the back window was broken out and there was blood on the ground. And DNA testing was done, and it came back and determined that it was most likely him. And so we had just missed him by minutes, possibly. Pretty frustrating, but an agent who actually a SWAT agent who was also working this case continued to just use every resource of the government and get really creative and use some capabilities to kind of track down where support might be going to help him, and ended up finding a random house in Justin, Texas.
Justin is like a really small little town in the middle of nowhere. I mean,
is that where they make the boots? Isn't it Justin Boots?
It's not in the middle of nowhere. Like it's, I don't know, 30 minutes from Fort Worth.
Yeah.
But it is like a very small little place. Yeah.
But is it where they make the boots?
They have a big Justin outlet. It's great if you want to go get some cheap boots.
I don't
boots.
Know if they make the boots.
I don't know if they actually make them there, but they definitely play off the name and the huge boot outlet store there. So plug for that outlet mall there. And so started surveillance on that house. And we would see some family members come and go from it occasionally. And at night, every once in a while, you would see a very tall figure. Yasser was tall, moving back and forth in the shadows. You would just see a shadow move back and forth across the window. And we got a search warrant based off of all this evidence and years of the agent working on this thing. Amazing. We pull up in the middle of the day. As soon as that search warrant came, we're like, we're not missing it. Went and hit the house. And amazingly, I was right at the door. He opened the door, and it was shocking to like stand eye to eye with him. Finally, just like, I can't believe you just opened the door. It's him. One of my team leaders who'd been working this case for years grabs him, pulls him out. It's pouring rain. They kind of fall, get in the mud. So we jump down, handcuff him, and I got to escort him back and put him in the car. And so it was pretty incredible to actually go hands-on and catch the top 10. And then we were able to also prosecute his son and brother.
Yeah, I was going to ask about who's this family that is like, oh, yeah, we're totally sign off on you killing those girls because that makes sense.
Yeah, it was his brother and his son were helping him. And they were the ones that actually ended up leading us to that house. So by tracking them down.
I'm thinking about it. Justin, Texas. there can't be a ton of Egyptians living in Justin, Texas. So was that like one of the red flags right there, or?
No.
No.
Because he never came out of the house.
Yeah, and you said just a shadowy figure. Doesn't the FBI have like those like crazy things where you see all the colors and shit, you know? And then they know like
technology.
The, yeah. And then they can tell the body temperature of someone and then, you know, that does like do noises. And then that's what I picture.
That technology is out there and you can use it. But most of the time it comes down to a bunch of dudes like me sitting in a car with binoculars.
That's a letdown, Josh.
All night long.
Oh, like, gosh.
Yeah. I got it. Get pictures of it. And then you bring in the technology, but you kind of have to have enough
And you sit evidence. In the car in Justin, Texas for hours on end.
And what do you snack on? Hot.
Yeah, what do you snack on?
I like a lot of, I bring a lot of beef jerky with me if I'm alone.
It's so salty. I knew you get so dehydrated.
But you got water with you. Or sadly, I lived on like
energy drinks.
Monsters. For... You look like a monster guy.
Yeah. Bang. I don't know if you guys heard of Bang, man. Mm-hmm. I used to hammer down those things. My kids are like, Dad, you got to stop. You're going to have a heart attack.
You can't
have that
stop.
Many of those a day. Yes. So I did, giving them up completely now.
I'm glad. Let me ask you, because I think I asked you before, but when I first met you, I was like, did you get to tell your wife things that you were doing?
So normally, sometimes you could. And sometimes just based off the news, she would know. Like I would get a call out and be like, I have to go. And she'd be like, look at the news and like, oh, there's an active shooter. I wonder where my husband's gone. But there were often times that I would have to, a number of times I was like, hey, I'm leaving. I'm going to be gone for 8 days. We're not allowed to say where we're going. I'll let you know about it when I get home.
Did she have Live 360 on your phone?
No.
You can't be tracking them.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I would want to. And when you would go, I mean, I don't know how she did it. Because
were your kids able to say that their dad was in the FBI when they went to school?
So we had started out, we wouldn't let them when they were young. But I'll be honest, when my daughters hit middle school, I was like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I finally,
I might start telling my kids to say that.
Yeah. I had a coach at the middle school who taught exploring careers. And he was like, dude, could you ever come in and talk about the FBI? And I'm like, yes, I can. On one condition, I'm wearing my full SWAT uniform, including my gun. And he's like,
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So at lunch, after I was talking in class during my daughter's lunch, man, I went straight down to the cafeteria, walked across. I'm like, stand up. Give her a big hug. I'm like looking at every dude in that cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And she just graduated high school last year. And towards the end, one of those boys came up and was like, hey, Mr. Hodge, I will never forget seeing you that day in the cafeteria. You were the scariest man I'd ever met. And I was like,
that's awesome.
That was
exactly my plan.
Mission accomplished. So we kind of let it get out there in the school at that point.
And of course. But for your son, because he has an older son also, did you not talk about it?
No, he kept it pretty quiet.
And what did you say? Like, what would he say if people are like, what does your dad do?
He works for the government.
Oh, okay.
And then like doing a lot, like, I don't know, paperwork and stuff. It just.
Yeah, like, I guess kids don't really ask.
Yeah.
I know. It's the parents, really.
Yeah. Right?
It is really like, the parents, I guess, that ask. My husband has he has a job that no one understands. People ask like one sentence and then they're like, okay, sounds boring.
Yeah.
You should just say FBI.
Yeah.
I'm going to start doing that.
No, right. Well,
maybe people wouldn't take advantage of me so much if I did.
Well, they'd be like, oh, this poor woman is clearly broke and living a very tough life. We'll let it slide.
Can we talk about the Vegas incident?
Yeah. This is a big one for me personally. It was a good case. Most of it's classified, but I got some bad guys were going to Las Vegas. And we knew they were going to be meeting with some people. We just thought they were. I wrote up the operation to send a team of agents to Las Vegas to do surveillance on these guys. It was the first time I'd been in charge of like a full operation. And I chose Vegas, which is super challenging.
Tell us why it's challenging.
Well, one, there's lots of people, which makes it somewhat easier, but it's also you can get lost. You can lose people quickly when you're trying to watch. Then there's also tons of different routes. And so these guys started doing what we call surveillance detection routes. And they could move through the casinos and the hotels, and they would go up a flight of stairs, walk down the hall, take the elevator down two flights of stairs, or two floors, before they would leave their building. And so it becomes really challenging to stay on top of people as they're moving through all that. And then one of my favorite stories is they were going to go get on a bus, not like a city bus, but like a private bus that was moving some people around from conferences to hotels and different places and events. And so they go hop on the bus, and I'm like, all right, we got a shift. I'm going to send you to get on the bus with them because we can't lose them. But we don't want to burn a whole lot of people by everybody getting on the bus. So we sent one guy on this bus with this group of bad actors. And as he gets on and the bus starts to pull away, I kind of have a panic moment as the guy in charge. Like, I just sent one dude on a bus going someplace I don't know. So it was concern for his safety now. And
he could be going to Mike Tyson's house. He has tigers in Vegas.
Vegas is a scary place to sense, like, boldness of this guy to sneak on the bus. Like, he didn't actually have authorization to be on the bus. Snuck on the bus, and then he's like, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm gonna follow these bad guys.
So scary. And does he have an earpiece in, or how does he communicate with you, like, where he's
at?
Cell phone.
So all he could do was text us, because we didn't want, like, radios, and you stand out if you get an earpiece. Yeah, and so we're trying to be completely covert. So we got eyes on the bus, and I was like, all right, you two try to find an Uber or a Lyft or something to stay with this bus. The rest of us, we're going to take off and we're going to chase this bus on foot. And so we take off running, and a couple of us are able to stay with the bus. Thank God for some red lights and slow traffic down the strip. And the bus pulled in, and we were like 30 seconds behind it, but we lost another guy in the run. And so we go in, follow these guys. One of them goes to a bar, one goes to his hotel room. We didn't lose them, kept them. I'm like, where is so-and-so? This guy's just disappeared. We lost him on the run. So now I've lost another one.
Doing a good job here.
I'm doing a terrible job.
Sounds really awful.
I text him. He comes walking. He's like, I'm coming up to the hotel now. Walking out. And he is carrying just a big old soda. Slurping on it. And I'm like, what are you? He's like, bro, I was dying. No way I could keep up with you guys.
He was not on SWAT.
He was not on SWAT. He just stopped, grabbed a drink, chilling out. But we ended up, 2 years in a row, they would go there, and we followed them around. And they went into, I was telling Tabitha, they went into a casino, and I'm on the eye, so they're betting. So I pull out my own money. No taxpayer dollars were used for this. But sitting at the blackjack table,
I started
playing.
I was actually wondering that, by the way. I was like, do you guys have, like, some sort of allotment? Because I was like, I asked him this story. I was like, okay, like, if there's just a bunch of dudes, like, lurking around, not actually, like, looking like they should be in Vegas, like, how does that work? I was like,
those pit bosses are not messing around. If they see you standing around staring at somebody, not gambling, they're going to talk to you.
Yeah. So he said, yes, he got to gamble a little bit.
I started playing blackjack, and I get hottest streak I've ever had at a casino. And I'm up hundreds of dollars. And I'm like, this has got to keep going. It's probably because I was distracted, not paying attention to the cards, because I'm like watching them across the, and all of a sudden they get up and start walking off. And I'm like,
dang it.
I want to keep playing. But
good
I said,
thing you weren't at craps, because they would have been real mad if you were at that time. Away. Yeah.
Yeah. So it probably ended up saving me. I didn't lose my money, and I made money on that trip. So,
caught the bad guys. I don't know if we got to that story. Did you catch them?
We did catch them
there in Vegas.
No, we used that intel. I worked that case as the case agent for 5 years before we got to a point where we, took action, against them.
Okay. So what I'm getting is a lot of this is real boring. A lot of it is just, you don't get to use as much cool stuff as I envisioned, and you got to just surveil people. Womp.
I tell people all the time when they're talking about going to the FBI, I say, look, 85% of your life, especially if you're not on SWAT, then it's like 90% of your life is super, super boring. You're sitting at a desk, or you're doing surveillance, just sitting, working on a computer. The difference is the 10% is
super,
super, really awesome.
Crazy, badass shit.
And then when you're on SWAT, we average, like I did 10 years, I did a little over 300 operations. And so you get a lot more action and fun and tools to use and stuff than the average agent.
So during all your years in the FBI, I mean, I don't know what you're doing now, but you're going to tell me eventually. You said you would. Do you carry a gun all the time and the badge so you could like go into a movie theater and be like, I don't think you're sold out?
I did carry my badge and gun like 99.9% of the time with me. I felt some agents don't do it as much, but on SWAT, like we hit cartels, houses, you know, arrested foreign adversaries, cartels, human traffickers, drug dealers, gangbangers. And then, you know, we then live here. And so I had many situations where like I'm walking through a Walmart or you're at a concert and you're like, oh, last week when we were busted into that door and arrested that guy, that dude was sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And so you're just living in it and around it 24/7. And so I just didn't feel responsible to not have it with me.
Right.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's the scary part.
That is really the scary part. I feel like I hate that. I hate that for your wife. I feel like you're always like guarded. Are you still?
Yeah.
You're out now.
I still struggle with, with that.
Looking around.
Yeah. Just being like
hyper
going to the grocery store. Yeah. I'm working through. I don't have to worry about that anymore, but it's hard to turn off. So that's
okay. Can you tell us some things about safety? I'm really interested in stuff like that.
Yeah. So I was talking to Josh I texted him cause I don't even know if it was a false alarm, but it was one of those, you know, like we got something at our school that somebody did something. And if you don't feel safe that your kid's here, then you don't have to bring them to school today, which makes me a little bit nervous or a lot of bit nervous. So I would love to know like safety for our children, cause we want to send them to school and we want to, they're already aware of school shootings, right? Like we can't just be
mine
like,
they're not, I,
they are,
they do not get it.
They do because they have like shelter in place. So they already go through drills. So maybe they don't.
I am a failure, Tabs. Literally my kid asked me yesterday, what do I do if there's an earthquake? She was like, we don't have those here. I was like, girl, we do. We do. I'm like, go away from the window. She's like, oh, okay. I'm like, she's like, I'll run down the stairs and get you. I'm like, you can't run down the stairs. The stairs are shaking.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. You are horrible.
So I haven't even gotten through earthquakes in California. I'm telling you, I've not gotten through like active shooter on campus.
So I would love to go through that. And then I would also love to go through, cause we all have teenagers here, and the safety of just having teenagers, boys and girls. And I know we talked about cell phone safety, which I think I was telling one of my friends and she was like, can he come talk to all of our girls?
Only if he gets to wear his full SWAT uniform.
I'll invite all the boys too.
I still got it. And I still fit in it. It's, so school safety is one, at least in Texas, most of the kids are aware of, like, this is a threat. And we've had the practices and the same, you know, messages that Tabitha got about, you can choose, there was a threat. So I tell my kids, look, if you don't feel comfortable, if you feel nervous, don't go to school. If we know there's a possible threat, I would never want to put my kids in that situation. I kind of leave it up, have that discussion with them about how nervous they are. If it's creating unneeded anxiety, it's a great open conversation time with your kids to get them to discuss these things with you and where they are in the fear level. On a normal day though, we've taught them key things that we teach. I run through this with corporate America clients. And when I was in the FBI, we trained corporate America, teach to the kids. It's run, hide, fight. If you hear a gunshot and you can get away, get out of the building, get out, go, and take shelter somewhere safe. If you don't feel like you can get away, immediately go hide somewhere that gives you some protection. If you can lock a door, lock a door. Statistically, in most active shooters, they will test doors. And if it is locked, they move on. Not a guarantee, but a percentage of them are looking for the easiest targets.
Right.
So lock the door, make it harder. Odds are they're going to keep moving, trying to find a softer target. So do that. As soon as you hide, immediately start looking for weapons. Like, if I need to fight, what do I have around me that I can use? And I will talk to my kids about, all right, we're in this room and we're hiding. What could you use in this room to help defend yourself? Like, oh yeah, there's a stapler. You could use a stapler. Here's a pencil and a pen. Here's, use that. How would you use it? And second, have people with you. If there's more than one, have a plan. Like, if someone comes through this door with bad intentions, you do this, and I'll do this, right? Like, get them used to thinking about it and talking about it. And it seems traumatic a little bit, but not all kids, Gretchen, but most are already having anxiety.
Yeah, you're going to have to come tell my kids. I have tried to have talks with them, and they're always like, Mom, why are you such a drag? Stop talking about this. You're scaring us.
Kyla also is, and she's, you know, smart cookie, but she's like, Mom, you always, like, all you do is talk about how, like, awful things are. And I'm like, well, because they are.
But just a small conversations, just a little bit. I'm not saying, like, I don't run through, like, hardcore tactics with my kids.
No, I'm noting this. Run, hide, fight. That's good.
Yes, but I think the fight part is where I didn't even think about that part when we were talking about this earlier. I was like, oh, yes, hiding. But then actually being able to defend yourself with anything that you can is just another layer that they can use. And, I mean, we all hope and pray that that never happens. But we always, like, Gretchen and I always talk about being aware of your surroundings and knowing, you know, that things could happen before they do. Like, you don't, you know, walk alone, or you don't even, you know, you have your keys out and you don't, like, honk your horn, you know, way far from where you are. So you let everybody
actually
know.
I do. And I've explained this because I don't know where my car is.
I was guilty at airport parking lots.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm like, safety's out the window. Where is this stupid car? I can't find it.
I did that the other day. I was like, I had it in the back of my head. I'm like, I'm not supposed to honk the horn. I don't know where my car is.
I know. And you know, my car now has an app. It shows me where my car is in a parking lot. Yeah, I still can't figure it out. I'm like directionally
challenged. Okay. Challenged. You know,
I'm funny. That's going for me.
True. That'll probably take you further, actually.
Yeah, it will. That's a better skill. That's a better skill in life. And then Tabitha mentioned, never go alone. Getting our kids and adults, but specifically girls, I love the practice of women using the restroom in a group. Like, don't walk around alone. Don't make yourself an easy victim. What I mentioned about active shooters looking for the easiest targets and the soft targets, it's the same with most criminals. If I got three people walking together versus one person walking together, they're going to go after the one person walking. Think about making yourself a harder target for people. And just living in that mindset of, it's a dangerous world and I'm not going to make it easy on them. None of us are guaranteed, but do not make yourself an easy target. And then, you know, we didn't talk about this, but some kind of pepper spray, mace, even like a whistle. We have whistles on the girls' keychains. Mm-hmm. Just silly little things that can draw attention if something is happening, if someone does grab you, something that can give you a split second to get someone's attention. Because those seconds can be the difference of it being noticed, someone seeing it happen, and being able to end up helping you avoiding it or being able to find you if something bad does happen. Mm-hmm.
That is a good thing. Embrace new beginnings. What a better way to start off 2025 than to learn a new language. I got Rosetta Stone over a year ago and have really enjoyed learning a couple different languages. Y'all know that when I went to Japan, I was learning Japanese. And now that my daughter is taking French in school, I am learning French through Rosetta Stone. It's amazing. It's been around for 30 years, so it is really the most trusted online tool to learn a new language. They have 25 different languages to choose from: Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, Dutch. I mean, if you name it, they probably have it. I think that it's amazing, and you should think about doing this for your New Year's resolution too. It's convenient and flexible, and the value is unheard of. You get a lifetime membership for all 25 of those languages. Start your New Year's off with a resolution that you can reach. Today, Housewives of True Crime listeners are going to be able to take advantage of this New Year special from Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership. Visit rosettastone.com/today
That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your New Year's offer at rosettastone.com/today.
Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, your kids, and your retirement, even during the holidays. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you. And you don't need a ton of time. You can create your Acorns account and start automatically investing your money in just 5 minutes. Acorns helps you build your financial future in the background so you can focus on all your holiday shopping and parties. So genius. Another great thing about Acorns is you don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now. That could be $5 a day or even just your spare change. That's right. Acorns can round every purchase you make up to the dollar automatically and invest your spare change for you. So that coffee you grab on the way to the mall, that's investing. And you get bonus investments just for buying the stuff you need from the brands you love. With Acorns, every single gift you buy this year could put more money in your investment account. It's like cash back, but the bonus investments have a chance to grow. So head to acorns.com/clink or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Pay client testimonial. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns investing. Involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, and SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/clink. Lady listeners, are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you are, you are most definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormonal disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. They are in our food, water, the air we breathe. They are all up in our business, messing with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through, perimenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier through these changes. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. I've been taking Hormone Harmony for months and will keep on keeping on because it just makes life easier. I feel less stress, less bloat. And just even, I feel more like myself. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CLINK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code CLINK for 15% off today.
But you know, you always hear the old adage, like, yell, don't yell rape or whatever, yell like fire. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think just yell. Before.
Yelling, like, you're going to get their attention. Help me, fire, rape. Not everybody, but I can tell you the presence of mind to think about what word should I yell right now. You can tell yourself, I have a greater chance if I yell this or this. Odds are if somebody is grabbing you, attacking you, that's not what's going to go through your head. It's help me. And so it's really a message of for the rest of us. If you hear people yelling, don't keep walking. Because
yeah,
that's the issue. I've seen how people's minds work when bad things are happening, and it's really hard to think about what word should I yell right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think about, I worry about kids not hearing something and not taking it seriously and not reporting it. Or I feel like we hear about kids reporting it to the school and it's not taken seriously. I'd like to know the phrase that, like, you know, when you go to the ER room, you have to say you have like chest pain, like that gets you in. Like, what is the phrase that gets you in?
This is a multi-level problem. Any threat, like, it has to be reported. A lot of the stuff you'll get is somebody says something on Snapchat or one of these other apps, does a picture of themselves with guns and is like, I'm bringing the heat to school tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And kids will be like, oh, that's a funny joke. And they don't report it. And so that needs to be reported. And they usually report it to their parents or the school. And sometimes the school or parents will then report it to us. Like, dude, we had a lot of like, hey, this kid made a threat on social media at the school and we have to step in.
And the FBI does. Do they step in on those occasions?
I can tell you, our office, every time we heard about it, we stepped in. We did an investigation, usually involved an interview with the parents and the student. Like, we'd find out who did it, and we'd go have a pretty rough talk with them about what you've done. I'm here. You're on the radar. I can put you in prison today for this threat.
Could you really?
Yeah, it's a terroristic threat, depending on what they said. It can be hard to get a really good, like a harsh prosecution for a 14-year-old saying something stupid on Snapchat. So usually it's going to be like a little misdemeanor, slap on the wrist to get on the record and be on the radar for them. But that usually solves it and scares everybody. But we would respond to every school incident that got reported to us. The problem is the ones that you've seen historically. Someone may report it in, 2 years ago, that was looked at, and then everybody kind of forgets about that person. Mm-hmm. And now there's a record of it, but 2 years have gone by with nothing, and then that person decides to go do something crazy. And it's like, well, you knew about it. Like, yeah, but I can't track a 15-year-old for 2 years.
Right. Like,
we need parent involvement. And that's the, I mean, not to get on a soapbox on the school thing, but growing up, school shootings weren't a thing for me. Right. Like, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We like to point blame in a lot of different areas. And I'm like, let's figure, what's the root cause? It's like, I grew up in an area where like we had shotguns in our cars in the parking lot. And we'd go hunting at lunch. So it's not the access to there's something else mentally going on. And I feel like we can put band-aids over other things, but it's really what is going on within our kids that this is becoming a reality. And that's the problem I would like to see us start really having conversations about and solving. Otherwise we're really just doing kind of band-aids to a much, much greater problem within our society right now.
Right.
I agree. So. I agree. The first one I remember is Columbine and being just absolutely glued to the TV, shocked that could happen.
Mind blowing
that was even a possibility. And now there are so many, we can't even keep track. Yeah. And then this latest one, apparently the FBI did pay the family a visit. And then the father, I am so happy that he's being prosecuted too. They are making a great example out of that. I mean, that is, I feel like you get one visit, the FBI should get to take all your freaking guns.
Well, like, and then the mom called that morning, right? She knew. Mm-hmm. And they kind of didn't take her seriously.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's where I'm like, oh my gosh, people need to take it more seriously.
When mommy is saying, I'm afraid of what my kid is going to do, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big problem. But I need to put a disclaimer because I just felt I gave a pretty big opinion. All my statements are my opinion. They are not the opinion of the FBI or my current company. They're just me.
Yes.
Okay. So how long did you serve and you left and now what are you doing now?
So I served a little over 14 years and then I always crack up. One of the big four accounting firms, KPMG, actually approached me and said that they would like to hire me. And so we had a lot of conversations and I left and I do internal investigations for corporate America and I do physical security and crisis management consulting for companies now. So kind of took everything I've learned over those 14 years about investigations, safety, security, and operating under crisis, and now take that to corporate clients to help them become better and keep people, employees safer.
That's good. And do you investigate or teach them how to avoid fraud?
So we do. We do like fraud technology and capabilities to better track where fraud might be. How do you spot it? How do you find it? So we have those services and teaching them. And then I've done trainings of their investigators to help up their investigations game internally on how to do interviews with people and get or information from them.
Yeah, I hate them. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of them out there, man.
There is a whole lot. Yeah. Okay. And I've always wondered this. So when you're at your little FBI computer and you're suspecting fraudulation or you're looking, can you just type in their name and then see all their banking information right away? Do you just have access to that?
No. So my friends are always like, oh, big bad FBI, you can just get anything on anybody. Good news is we still have some constitutional rights. For banking records, it does take a subpoena. So you have to have enough information and provide it to a U.S. attorney that they think like, okay, there's enough smoke here that we're going to give you access to this information. So you still have to write up a subpoena request, get the courts to say, yes, you can go get this.
But because you're the FBI, isn't it a lot faster than maybe
than me or you?
We're really, really good at it. Like I could, you know, you can knock out a subpoena, have the results back very quickly. And one of the great things now though is, and I saw this change while I was in the FBI. When I first got in, the communication between offices and areas of the country was awful. It was really hard to like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Does this person show up? And while I was in there, they got very, very good at being able to share information across areas so that if I'm looking at a bank record and someone is in it and they're the subject of a case in Seattle, we can both immediately see that like, hey, we have a case tied to each other, which has made making all the connections and dots across the fraudsters and criminals much faster.
Important. Yeah. So yes. Important. Because did you ever come across where maybe there was a bit of a battle of the egos? Like, I feel like sometimes the local police don't really want the big bad FBI to get involved, and that's stupid.
Well, we just got in it. We just actually finished a case today where there's a missing person. Well, you might know of it. Her name's Maura Murray out of New Hampshire. And her, like, they never called in the FBI, even though she came from Massachusetts. And so there was
So she crossed state lines.
State lines. They could have called in the FBI. This little four-person police department decided they wanted to take it on themselves. And then they eventually called in the state police, but not for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years did they get the FBI involved. And you can't step in without law enforcement asking you to, right?
Yes.
That's such crap.
And I'll give some of the blame is on us. I have seen FBI agents and management not handle things well. And we have to get better at stepping in and not being like, hey, we're the big bad FBI here to take over. But we're here to support you, help you, be a partner with you. Mm-hmm. And as you have leaders who can do that, things go much quicker, better, and you see a lot better results. I've seen the other side where we come in heavy handed and the egos get in the way and cases get messed up and people get hurt. And I've also seen the ego on the flip side though, where the locals are like, we want to handle this. And we had a police officers got shot in this area. Guy was holed up in his house and the local police, one of their guys got shot and they were like, we're going to get him.
Yeah.
And they sat out there for 7 hours. I think it was about seven before someone finally was like, we're going to need help. And they called us, we showed up and the entire incident was over in under 20 minutes. And I'm like,
Just use us as a resource.
Just use us. Yeah. Like we have much better tools and capabilities. And so it's really a two-way street. Both of us kind of have to learn to check our egos and we're all on the same mission and the same team and want to accomplish the same goals. And we can't let, and I learned that in my career quickly. I considered a very successful career with a lot of really good big cases that made big impacts. And it's not because I was really smart or great, but because I quickly realized I'm not the smartest guy in the room. So I reached out to every single government agency I could and said, would you like to help me with this case? Would you like to help me with this case? Would you like, let's just play fair. And was able to create working groups on all my cases. That now gave me the full access to the entire U.S. government to go after people.
And that sounds like the smartest guy in the room, actually.
It really does. Yeah, it really does.
We just need more of that across all of law enforcement.
Listen, in all of law enforcement and in most things.
That's true.
Yeah, right? So true.
We do.
Yep.
Like, even in marriage.
Everybody, actually. Pull out all the stops.
We need to utilize our husbands more.
I don't know.
They would agree. We need to give them more breaks. They need more time on the couch.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Okay. I want to know if, like, so say you're at one of these pole vaulting events and there's some kind of doucheroo parent or something, and you just are feeling something's up with him.
Maybe a football game and some
maybe
clown
a football
is
game
giving him a hard time. Yeah. Yes.
Do you go, like, and run his plates and, like, find out, like, who is this guy and do your little call your old friends?
No.
What do you got on him?
It's so we're real. I was.
Gretchen, you cannot do that.
That is very, very strict. It is.
That is against policy of like privacy.
It is. Well, I'm asking. I'm genuinely concerned. Is it? It's against policy.
It is against policy. And they track every
search.
Even
when you're in it, can you?
Yes. No.
Could you? Really?
They track every search you do, and you can be audited. And if you don't have a legitimate reason for the search you did, it's big trouble. You're not going to get fired for the first offense, but you're definitely going to get like days off with no pay.
Yeah, I agree. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But I don't like that either. I think you should be able to.
I think you should. That should be like a perk of the job. I think I want to know what's up with my next door neighbor.
That's probably why people after like these kind of jobs go into private investigating, right?
Now you can. You can.
Now you can. Yeah. And maybe my last week I'd be like, okay. Going through the whole tax.
Now we'll say, we'll go back to, this was one of those moments. So when I first moved, I first got my family to Texas. We were apart for about a year after I got into the FBI. I was like, I got to really sell them on Texas, make them love this place. So we got season passes to Six Flags and took them to the Texas State Fair. And we're walking out.
Fried butter.
Give them fried Oreos and big old turkey legs and ride rides. And we're walking out though. And I look over and there are two Dallas police officers getting beat up by a guy. And they're like trying to get cuffs on him. They can't do it. And he's fighting them. And there's a crowd around him yelling at them. And I was like, I've been an agent for just over a year. And I'm like, all right,
what do you do?
Kids, go over there. Like, try to tell. So then I run over, jump in, grab the guy, get him. I'm like, what do you guys need? And they're like out of breath. Not the fittest officers. And, we run, they go grab a radio, get him handcuffed, deal with it. And it backfired a little bit because now my kids don't want to ever go to the Texas State Fair again. But,
or maybe that didn't backfire.
So I had a traumatic incident at the fair too.
The fair's a crazy place. Yeah, all fairs.
Yeah.
Never let your kids go to a fair alone. That's for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Good to know.
Large crowds. Stay close together. We talk.
But like, Six Flags, you would let the kids like as teenagers?
Yeah. What do you think about that actually?
So we don't allow our kids to go to Six Flags without adults.
Okay.
Now you don't need like an adult per kid, mm-hmm. right? But if like three of her friends want to go and there's another mom and dad going, then I will allow it. But there's strict orders. Like you don't ride rides alone. You don't do anything alone. It's you three together at all times. And I don't rest well, but.
And do you let them, like if there's an adult, can the adult be like somewhere else and then the girls be somewhere like going on the rides by themselves, but there's like a check-in point of an adult?
Yes. Okay. So, and we've like practiced it, like, and I tell them like, all right, if my three kids want to go ride a ride together, I'll be like, you can go ride that ride together without me. I'm good. And if you're not back here within, depending on the lines, like 45 minutes, just know your dad's going to freak out. Right. So you have, and I can't leave. I'm like, and I talk to the parents about, you need to have a meetup spot and stay there.
Okay.
Wait for the kids and have constant check-ins. You don't get to go ride, and then check in. Mm-hmm. It's do something, check in. Right. Okay. We're going to go do something, check in.
Because if you just want check in. That? At what age?
18.
18. That's hard. I guess because you have to. Yeah. I mean, you could say 30.
Yeah, if I could, I would say 30. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, even at my daughter who just turned 19 yesterday, I'm like, you don't go to Walmart alone. You don't go to parties alone. You do not do anything alone. Like, you are a cute young woman and you don't do things alone.
Can she get it delivered?
Yes.
Okay.
Well. Because they can't get to her dorm room. They can get it delivered
to the front
lobby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Now I feel like I can probably predict your answer, but what is your take on the cell phone situation? Like how old were your children when you gave them a cell phone and social media?
So first on the cell phone, my son was the trailblazer and I was kind of a rule that nobody gets a cell phone until you're 13. But then he was riding his bike to school and crashed. And he didn't have a cell phone and he was sitting on the side of the road in our neighborhood, covered in mud. And another parent called and said, I just saw your son sitting in the room. And I'm like, all right, we may need to let them have a cell phone if they're going to be going around. So we kind of, in middle school, we let them have a cell phone. At first, it's just a flip phone with just call and text before you get to earn the smartphone. But the smartphones they could get, but we don't really allow social media at all in any form until 14.
And then, 14's still young. I'm amazed.
Yeah. Well, it's, but like, that's like Instagram, where you're friends with us. We have access to it. That kind of thing. There's no Snapchat or any of that. None of the private coded messaging.
And you know all those secret ways that they hide it.
Yeah. And we actually tied all of their, none of them were allowed to have their own Apple account. They had to use it ours. So any downloads that are made show up on our account and we know what's been downloaded. Mm-hmm. So your kid can't go download something, delete it off their phone. So when you check the phone, it's not there. Oh, and then they can just re-download it when they're on a loan because it's downloaded on their cloud. So theirs is tied to ours.
Okay. So that's a good tip. Tie your kids to your iCloud account. Okay.
Yeah, it does create some issues, right? Like the contacts and stuff can get a little wonky, but like I have all my,
like you can't like be, you know, sending naked pictures to your husband because that could pop up.
Oh yeah. Cause I do that all the time.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
There are. I have some listeners. Okay. That probably
I have some friends who are like, you're an idiot. I can't do the photos. But, but I also like that all my kids' contacts are in my phone as well.
For sure.
I'm like, who is this one? I don't know. So that's what we do. Now we do usually let, I think somewhere between 16 and 17, we caved and allowed Snapchat. It bothers me still. And it really bothers my wife. But so much communication, like they don't even text these days. And so at some point we wanted them to start using it under our roof so we could help them learn how to do it before they, because as soon as they leave your roof, they're going to get it. So we wanted to let them have access to it while still under our roof at some point.
I mean, I think that is absolutely, that's the thing that they're going to get it at some point.
Yep. I told Tabitha this and people think I'm crazy. You need to realize, to me, you look at statistics wise, it's truly more dangerous to give your child social media than it is to give them a gun. So when you give them access to that social media, you need to be viewing it as I'm giving my child a very, very dangerous tool that if not used properly can cause long-term emotional, mental, and potentially physical damage to them. And take the seriousness of it as I've given my child a very, very serious, dangerous tool. And there's a lot of responsibility that comes with doing that. That's probably whatever age you choose, that's your call, but just that's my recommendation is realize the level of danger with that tool.
Right.
And we saw on a weekly basis, probably attempts at the grooming through Snapchat and through social media of young girls and boys.
That is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is scary. Yeah. My kids don't have phones.
Scary. Yeah.
They have the watches where they can only call my husband, I, and their siblings.
I know. That's what we have for our youngest too.
And I can track them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the beauty.
Yeah. Well, Josh, I would love to talk to you more. Will you do like a quarterly with us? Cause I think we could have so much more to talk about and even get like listeners to give us questions that they want to hear.
That would be fun.
Somebody. Yeah. Wouldn't that be fun?
I could be available for that occasion, or the listeners may say, like, never bring that dude on again.
No way. our listeners, we know them well. They're our BFF, so they were going to love this interview.
Well, and I've got like four more cases that I made notes on.
Okay, next time.
Let's put it on.
So we can come back and I've got my ammo now to make sure I don't run out. So we can talk about different cases too.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Let's do that. I'll put it on the books. But I really thank you for your time. I think this was so awesome. And I know Gretchen, you probably have even more questions, but so I do want to get you on the books. And is there anything you want to ask us, Josh?
No, just keep it up. I think
you don't know what we snack on?
I got to see it earlier.
Yeah, you got to see it already. Gretchen was eating when he got on.
Hero Bread and peanut butter.
Hero Bread is one of our sponsor.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And that's Tav and I were having a discussion about Skippy peanut butter yesterday. And Tav, I was at Sprouts and I got that good kind that you make in the machine.
Ooh. Oh yeah, I love that.
Kyla
one.
Is straight tripping. If my she daughter thinks wants that Skippy peanut butter, is better oh my, than this. No. This is the best peanut butter.
Okay, I'm gonna have her do that because she thinks that I'm like the worst.
And it's
mom
creamy. It's creamy like skinny, organic. Like Skippy.
Okay,
that's the key. It's gotta be. I'm a creamy peanut butter guy.
Yeah,
it's critical.
Yes, yeah. But I get her the creamy. It's just organic, and so she's like, "Mom,
is that the oil that sits on
yeah,
top?
Yeah,
that's what
yeah,
throws
that's
them.
Stupid. Yeah, sure yeah, no, yeah, this stuff out of the machine, it doesn't have the oil
okay,
on top.
Fine. I'll get her that.
But I keep up the good work. I think all these shows, one, people love hearing about it, but two, the raising of awareness that you guys provide to people, I think is critical. And so when people hear about this, there's lessons to be learned within each one of these.
Yeah.
And so I just love this, the real talk that you guys have, a discussion about it, that make it where people can hear about this and learn in a good format. So thank you all for what you do.
Well, thanks, Josh.
That makes us feel good. All right. Well, clink, clink,
clink, clink.
Well, that's a wrap for today.
That is a wrap.
We wrap it up. Wrap it up, people.
Yeah, wrap it up, boo. It's a long one.
Wrap it up.
Yeah, I think it's great. Increase our self-awareness and we learn so many things. Maybe if the listeners have any suggestions for things we could talk to Josh about in the future.
So I think we should do that. So if you have any suggestions, you want to ask questions, which I know you do, you probably were thinking a million of them, please email us, housewivesoftruecrime@gmail.com. You can put it on Patreon. We will write them down, or you can Facebook us, Instagram us, whatever. But we would love to have your questions. We're going to have Josh back on probably at the end of October, maybe early November, somewhere around there. And he will answer all your questions. Cause I didn't even get into the FBI training course for the civilians. That's another story I have to talk to him about later. Mm-hmm. He did try for me, but
I cannot believe that you're just not the first one they want.
Listen, I usually get what I want. So
I know,
I'll blow to my ego, man. So I'll try again.
Keep kissing some FBI booty.
Right.
Or not. Be very professional and serious. Whatever they need, that's what we're going to do.
Right. I have a feeling I got some sort of secret background check and they were like, you know what she did in high school?
Yeah. She hangs out with that Gretchen girl that says fuck a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It's actually not what I was doing in high school. It's actually what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
Just kidding. I was such a good girl, you guys. I was really, really good.
And really was really exhausting. Good.
Well, have a fabulous weekend. Stay safe if you're doing the homecoming thing. I know that's all this month and next month and all that. Like, good luck to you. I just finished mine. Well, kind of. But yeah. Anyways, good on ya. Oh, and happy birthday to all of our children.
Happy birthday. Gretchen, Wyatt, and Colton.
Yes.
And the mother-in-law, Connie. And happy Ohana to me. It's kind of like a national holiday in June.
Yeah, it is. Pearl Jam is coming to her hood. Yeah. All right. So clink, clink.
Clink, clink.